And to call to order government operations, reform, technology, and elections. Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the minutes of Tuesday, March 20.
Representative Morgan moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. The first bill on the agenda is Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Thiessen, I'm going to first move that House File 176 be recommended to pass and be sent to where, Representative Thiessen?
Finance Committee.
To the Finance Committee. And Representative Thiessen, is it the DE2 amendment that you wish adopted?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Members, the DE2 amendment is being passed out now and is a delete everything. It will convert the bill to a study. This has been language that has been worked on for the last day with Representative Thiessen and the various groups. So the DE2 is before you. I'm going to move the DE2 amendment, and let's vote to put it into the bill so that the bill is in the order that the author wishes. So all those in favor of the DE2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Thiessen, the bill is in the order that you wish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, members, for the amendment. We have been working on this language. I'm not sure if we're describing these technology pieces and what we're going to study is a difficult thing. I'm not sure if we're all the way there, but I think we're close. And I think people are comfortable at least moving forward with this language. What the issue is, and I'm going to let the professor speak a little bit more to give a little bit of background, but what the issue is, really what we're trying to get at is we have all these documents that we have out in our archives around, and particularly more and more, these are in electronic form. And so there's concerns about how do we make sure those are going to be there, going to be accessible to us and to the public into the future, and what steps do we need to take now to preserve the kind of documents we already have and going into the future, making sure that the documents we are going to create in the future are going to be accessible to our citizens and to ourselves in the work we're going to do into the future. Because the record of what we do is important. It's kind of part of the lifeblood of what happens in state government. And so to talk a little bit more about the issues in general, I'd like to have the witness testify, if I could.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Riedel. I'm a professor in the Computer Science Department at the University of Minnesota, and I'm here to speak in support of HF 176 because of the important access that it allows to members of the public to the workings of our government. I'm going to talk about two reasons I'm in favor of the bill, and then I'll talk about one issue that a number of people have asked me about a concern about the bill, and I'll just speak to that for a few minutes. The first reason I'm in favor is because of the important role this bill will have in doing a study that guarantees that the public have rights to all of the documents that our government creates into the future. One of the things that may be hard to remember sometimes is the work we do here is work that is creating history for the state of Minnesota. And the scholars at the university are going to want the opportunity to be able to use and read and understand those documents that you're creating and working on. Now, I don't know if you guys remember back to what it was like in the early days of the phone system, when if you wanted to buy a phone, you had only one person you could buy the phone from. You had to go buy it from the phone company. And they said that's because that's the only way they could make sure that the phone system would work. Well, it turned out that once there were some laws passed, we could go down to Best Buy, buy any $10 phone, plug it into the system, and it worked fine. And the reason that happened is because of standards that guaranteed that that phone would be compatible with the phone system. And so what we're proposing is that state government should think about standards like that that would guarantee that the documents we work on are compatible with our software going into the future. And there are a number of approaches to that, but they all are based around one core idea. There has to be standards around the formats of the documents that we prepare in government. Now, the second reason that I'm in favor of this HF 176 is because of the principle of avoiding vendor lock-in. This is a really important idea in making sure that the purchasing is efficient. One of the things that we don't want to have happen is for somebody to be the only provider who can possibly provide hardware or software to the state of Minnesota. And one of the ways we can guarantee that is if we make sure that there are open standards that declare what formats our documents will be in, so that when we share those documents with our constituents, we know they'll be able to read them. And when they produce documents, we know that we'll be able to read those documents. Now, it's important to understand that it doesn't mean that vendors are evil, that they try to create lock-in. That's the job of vendors. Their job is to make more money for their shareholders. But our job is to make sure that we preserve the flexibility of state government in order to be able to buy software from a wide variety of people so that we can get a good price and so that we can maintain our flexibility to move into the future. You know, I can say firsthand as a computer science professor that technology is moving at surprising speeds, and we have to make sure that we have the flexibility to react to that. Now, a number of people have asked me, if we do this, shouldn't we instead do a study of all of the types of documents that are held in all the types of data that are held in government? If we shouldn't look at all the databases that we have, the information we have about our rivers and streams, and every single piece of data we have in the government. And I'll say that I think that would be great. That's a really good thing. But let's walk before we crawl. Let's first show that we can do the documents that we use to communicate with our constituents before we decide that we're going to do a very expensive and possibly very lengthy examination of every single part of the government. I think it's going to prove when we ask the CIO to go and look at this that there are some good ideas and there are some challenges, and he's going to study it carefully, come up with some ideas, and go implement something. Let's let him do that for the documents first, and then let's figure out what we want to do with all the rest of the data.
Oh.
Now, I'll say I think that it ought to be one of our goals in government that we allow openness and access to the citizens. And one of the things I really like about HS 176 is it's about that. It's about how can we make sure that our citizens can communicate with us, that we can communicate with them, and that we can communicate with posterity. And that's why I'm in support of it. I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
All right. I think we have two more testifiers. I'm going to remind everyone, we've started at 7:30. We have a very long agenda, and tomorrow we're starting at 7:30. So if we could be rather direct to the new bill that is before us and make your testimony as brief and to the point as possible. So, Representative Thiessen, who else would you like to have testify today? Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Marino Marcic. I'm with the Open Document Format Alliance. The alliance was launched just 1 year ago and includes 370-plus members from 51 countries. They include software vendors, large and small. Some of the larger ones you may have heard of are Sun, IBM, Red Hat, Oracle, Google, Novell. They include governments such as the City of Bloomington, Indiana, and as well as well-known NGOs and associations such as the American Library Association. I will be very brief. This bill arose out of a concern specific to documents, and specifically that Minnesota government may no longer be able to access vital documents. This is because, as the professor noted, they're in a proprietary, non-open format. The concern that governments may not be able to access and modify documents at some future date, they may not be able to receive, open, and use documents in times of emergencies, and they may be forcing their citizens to buy a software from a particular vendor in order to interact with the Minnesota government electronically. This is not some abstract issue that for technologists alone to resolve, but really goes to the heart of how you as legislators and the Minnesota government relate to your citizens. I think I'll leave it at that and allow maximum time for questions you may have about the bill.
All right.
Thank you.
We have one more. Mr. Horton, who's right. The state archivist, and he will be less than maybe 30 seconds, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Horton. I'm the state archivist at the Minnesota Historical Society, and I just wanted to say that we would be happy to participate in the study. We've worked with a variety of stakeholders already in the preservation of electronic documents, the Office of Enterprise Technology, the advisor's office, the Legislative Reference Library. We think this is a great idea. We look forward to participating in the study if the bill is passed. Thank you.
Do we have anyone that's going to testify against the bill?
Who is?
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Morgan Reed, and I'm with the Association for Competitive Technology. We represent about 3,000 small businesses throughout the world, including a company here in the Twin Cities area, Magenix, which has about 200 employees. And while the bill has changed a lot since the original version, and we are definitely very happy with the amendments that the chair has brought, our main concern with the legislation is clearly that any study that is undertaken that does not consider technology as an ecosystem, essentially, does it deal with the hardware? Does it deal with the software? And does it deal with document formats as well as the media that you store it on? Well, you end up with nothing at all. It's essentially like taking a slice of a puzzle and trying to figure out what the rest of the picture was. So as this language moves forward, I think it's important that whatever the committee decides to move forward includes all elements of the technology system. I think it's vital to think about that. Yesterday you had a Secretary of State employee talking about how business licenses are now done on web form on the Internet. And I can think of nothing that is a more important document to preserve than someone's business license. However, in the original form, if we don't include data as we move the study forward, we would miss that. If we only resolve to a narrowly defined group of documents, we'd miss that. If we didn't include media, well, we all remember what it was like when you had those giant black floppies that people would carry around and they'd make fun of on war games. Well, even if you had a perfect file format on that floppy disk, wouldn't do you any good. You couldn't read it. So unless you've got hardware, software, and the media that you read it on in the study, you won't see the full picture. Thank you.
Mr. Reed and Representative Thiessen, just to your point, and again, I've only read this rather cursory, so on 1.8, the study must consider but not limited to, if I'm reading this correctly, almost anything is going to be considered by this study. Is that correct, Representative Thiessen? I mean, the concerns that have been raised here, wouldn't they be part of this study if you so desired or the individual so desired?
Well, and Mr. Chair, thank you. And I think, again, we're still working on the language to try to make it manageable. I think that some of those issues related to, you know, the hardware and software that apply to how we deal with our documents would be open and would inform this study. I think that's true. And, you know, we will commit, I am committing to continue to work on this to try to make it a manageable study. I mean, the concern if we go to data, and all data, not just the data that's actually explicitly listed out here, and hardware and software and media, is that it just becomes too heavy and we get nothing out of it. I think there is some meaning to come out of studying what we're specifically talking about here.
I guess my concern is that while I appreciate his interest in making sure the study covers it all, what he's really saying, though, is, well, if we only study this segment, my experience with studies is if you direct the study and you tell it into a narrow segment and OET goes and looks at it, the result of the study will not give you the right answer. That if you only consider the document formats and you don't build a study that considers the whole aspect of it, you'll get the wrong answer, in which case you've wasted the state's money. So I think it's important that it be explicit in there that the entire ecosystem, in an agricultural analogy, if you only study the top of the wheat and you don't look at the stalk and the ground that it's growing in the field itself, then you don't understand the wheat itself. So it needs to be a full picture.
All right, well, Mr. Reed, I see the same phrase repeated on 1.13. And
that's right.
The reason why I brought it up is to address your concern that if those are real issues, then it would appear that even in this language it's broad enough, but I assume this language may change as it proceeds. But
I'm holding
up a valid point, Mr. Reed. Representative Emmer was first on the list. He had sent me a message, so.
I think I'll pass, Mr. Chairman.
All right, Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I think he was interested in the alliance that was brought forward earlier. I saw him.
I have the note here.
It's a little tricky, if you ask me. But Mr. Reed, could you...
I believe the reference Trekkie to Star Trek. and we do have certain individuals in this room who have been beamed to other places.
Mr. Chairman, thank goodness.
So,
Mr. Chairman, maybe I might be one of those in a few minutes. But Mr. Reed, could you tell me or help me understand the hardware and software piece? And then following up on that, I'll probably ask Representative Thiessen. I mean, if this is including but not limited to, why wouldn't we just put that language in there? That's the question for Representative Thiessen. And Mr. Reed, could you just explain to me the hardware software piece again?
All right, well, Representative Thiessen, you want to go first, and then Mr.
Sure, Mr. Chair. I think because if you just say hardware and software and media, it's not just going to be the way that those pieces interact with how we preserve our documents, which I think is a manageable study. If you say that, then basically you're studying our IT system, and that, I think, is not a very valuable study. I think that if you say the documents and then the mechanisms for reading the data, which is kind of the next phase of documents, that's what we're trying to capture with that language that they've been talking, that Mr. Reed and others have been talking about, that, and then you say, but including, then you can talk about how the software and the hardware interacts with that specific thing, how we maintain our documents, and you can bring that in, but you don't have to bring in managing of databases at the far end, which is a whole another, you know, at the back end of things. There's a whole much bigger issue, and I think would make the study unmanageable. So that's the reason that the language is as it is right now.
Mr. Eats?
I think the concern that he raises about it being too broad kind of gets to the point when he said, well, if we studied all of it, we'd have to study our IT system. And that's really what you need to look at, because the goal of this bill is to make sure that citizens can access documents going forward into the future, which means there needs to be an IT system from the state that provides that access. And that does end up including the software that's running and the hardware that they use, and whether or not they look at a state document from their cell phone or from a computer terminal at a Starbucks. So ultimately, the whole system needs to be looked at in order to ensure what he's talking about, which is access to data for your citizens.
Representative.
And just briefly on that, I mean, I think that's right, and I think this language captures that, except for I think there's big parts of our IT system that actually doesn't go to that issue. And I think that's exactly what I'm trying to say, that there's pieces of our IT, large pieces of our IT system, that don't go to how our documents are preserved and how citizens interact. And so that's kind of the distinction we're trying to make at this point to make it manageable. And again, we are going to continue to try to work on this language to get at something.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, one of the concerns that I have is if you take this approach of step one, step two, even the language, I think the intent is that it's broad, but it seems to me that it ought to say what is going to be studied specifically. And if it's going to include hardware, software, or data, it should say that. But my concern is that I've heard, we're going to study the document part first, and then, you know what, we'll come back and study the data part second. The concern is that you never get to step two. And so you're left with step one, and that's interesting, but not necessarily indicative of what's actually going on. And so if you do that, then you end up having to refund the study with another decision-making process through the legislature. Now, I'm concerned that you end up with a piece of the pie, but not the whole thing.
Professor Riddell, you want to address that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. I would say that the document piece to me is most of the pie. This is the really crucial part. It's the set of documents that people are going to want to read and people are going to want to study now and in the future. And so the reason to focus on documents is we're focusing on the things that most of your constituents are going to be interested in using and reading. Now, when I said that over the long term I'll be back saying, hey, Leah, let's do the data, I think that's true. You know, I do want to say one of the concerns I have is I think some of the players at this table are asking for us to do a very, very big thing in the hope that it will cause us to do nothing. And I think that's a very dangerous path. We don't want to do nothing. We want to make sure that we do something for the citizens.
Okay. Representative Broad. Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Thiessen, the problem that I'm having is that I think you've gone a long way towards trying to fix the bill as I originally read it yesterday. And the problem that I disagree with this gentleman from the University of Minnesota on is that we're not talking about what the real dispute is and what it is everybody's asking these questions for. And that is, the way it was originally drafted, we were creating winners and losers within in the... I don't even know how you describe them, vendors or the people that build the platforms, whatever. That is my concern, is that you're trying to draft it now to encompass everybody. But unfortunately, the way it was originally drafted gave the impression, actually it didn't give the impression, it sent the message that this was only going to benefit one particular vendor. Now, I think the questions that Representative Broad has raised go to that issue. We're concerned that even though you're going the distance to try and fix this so that people can get the information that you believe we need, we aren't specifying that this is not supposed to create winners and losers. And that's the problem. Is there some way that we can fix that before it leaves today so that we can specify that we're not going to let IBM have an advantage, we're not going to let Microsoft have an advantage, we're not going to let anybody else have an advantage? Is there some way that we can address that?
Representative Tease.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I think that gathering this information is doing exactly that. I think that the way this is the way the bill was originally drafted, I wouldn't disagree with you that it had that impression. I don't think there's anything in the language. As we sit here today, we're just getting information about this issue, and it's not intended to pick winners and losers. The original language wasn't intended, but I understand now, after having read it with more information, that it could have led down that path. This language is not doing that. We did have some another consideration that was in here originally that talked about vendor neutrality, and that language is actually taken out, I think, at the request of the people that felt like they were going to be squeezed out. They didn't like that language to include the language of vendor neutrality. So this is not, the intent of this is not to exclude anybody. It's to get at this issue, though, which may result in winners and losers ultimately, depending on what OET says, from the perspective of, if we want to be able to preserve our documents, there's certain ways we may have to proceed and certain ways we may not want to proceed. But the study itself does not to go to that issue, and we've tried to make a lot of strides away from that.
Thank you. Very quickly, Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, I didn't mean to suggest that you you were carrying this, and it turns out that it could give someone an advantage or some entity. What about putting that vendor neutrality language back in? Is there some objection to that in the room?
Not on my behalf. It looks like not on anybody's behalf. So can I do that, Mr. Chair? Can you do it?
You could do it quickly.
I know where it goes.
All right. Representative Thiessen, why don't you, Mr. Shepard?
I'll explain the amendment.
Let's direct this to Mr. Shepard, who had been drafting these.
Do you know where it goes? Okay. It would be on line 1.8. We'd take out the and at the beginning of the sentence, and then after interoperability, we'd say and vendor neutrality.
Mr. Shepard, does that work?
Mr. Chair, members, yes.
Representative Emmer? Any discussion? I'm going to move that amendment. I will move that amendment. And any discussion to that? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Any, Representative Brown?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, I'm still concerned when I'm reading through the language. Essentially, the way I read this, while I absolutely think we have one of the best chief information officers around, I'm concerned that one person has the ability to determine, the way I read the language, whether we do just documents or whether we look at the entire data structure, whether we look at hardware or software, whether we get a very narrow report or a very broad report. Am I reading it incorrect? I mean, that's how I read this language, is that one person has that ability to make the decision regarding the study.
Well, I suppose that would be right, yes. But I would also think that I think Mr. Khan is very well suited to do this study and will get us to the right answer and be very thorough about it.
All right. Anyone else wish to come down and testify? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen, not that I like to follow what the Senate is doing, but it's my understanding that they've amended this bill differently than what you have, and that the study is more broad to take into consideration some of the concerns that Representative Broad has mentioned here. And I'm just wondering, what kind of collaboration have you had with your Senate author on this bill and so forth?
Representative Thiessen.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we've not had any direct discussions about it. I think that they have gone too broad. And so that's where we are. We'll have to work that out as we proceed. I think that this is a manageable study. I think that the professor has explained that this study will get us meaningful work product. I think the language that as it's drafted, and again, I'm committed to continuing to work with everybody as I have done for the last 2 days to try to get at something that's meaningful and useful to the legislature, but that doesn't fall under its own weight, which is, I think, the concern with the Senate language.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I'll be brief here. I like the idea that you're trying to do here. I just think that you do need to expand it. Too often government is very narrow in what they look at, and they're not looking at the big picture, and we often do things in a piecemeal approach. And it isn't until years later that we say, oh, gosh, we should have done it in taking into consideration all of the items that should have been considered. And I just would encourage you to go more in that direction, especially when it comes to the issue of technology.
Thank you.
Representative Wolfsinger. Chair members, I do speak in support, Representative Thiessen, of your bill. I mean, ultimately, we do live in a capitalistic society. We do have leaders such as our CIO that can and are willing to make a decision. So I don't actually see what the issue is, but I speak in support of it.
Representative Kahn.
Just a clarification. Did I just hear Representative Anderson calling out for bigger government?
Representative Anderson, you want to clarify that before it gets to the media?
Yes. I assure you that is not the case, Representative Collins.
Right.
I just want government to be a little more thoughtful.
All right. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to, I actually had an amendment in my packet, but when I came here this morning, it's not here. So I must have put it in the wrong file. But I was planning on offering the Senate language because I think, Representative Thiessen, you've come a long way. But I do have still some concerns. I won't offer it today because I don't have it. But I do hope that you will continue, as you said you would, and work on that language going forward. So I
will
be offering that today.
Mr. Chair, I will work with Representative Broad and whoever else wants.
Well, it's going to finance, too, and that could be offered at that point. Seeing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 176, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you for your time, members.
Representative Lilly actually has two bills in a row. House File 1598 is the first one. So, Representative Lilly, what is this one?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Lilly, I'm going to move that House File 1598 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. Is that... Oh, I'm sorry. Hold it. I'm going to withdraw that and say be recommended to pass and be sent to finance.
That'd be a great spot for it, sir.
I'm glad you agreed. I wrote Sam Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yesterday I got to visit with you and watch some of your proceedings, and you were talking a lot about rocks with Mr. Emmer and stuff, so I decided to bring a weapon here in case, being the first day of spring. The bill we have today is...
Excellent choice.
Is
it a Titleist? But let's move on.
Don't linger.
I thought that might distract the chair for a few minutes, being the first day of spring. This bill is pretty straightforward. We certainly hope... that ratifies the contracts and finishes up the contracts between the nurses and the state of Minnesota and the Highway Patrol and then some of our old friends that used to be legislators that are now in the executive branch and gets them a little more money, I think. So That should add to the controversy.
Okay, Representative Lilly.
And then I have with me Greg Huebner, who actually is the brains of this operation here, and he can explain what the bill really does.
All right. Welcome to committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Huebner with the Legislative Coordinating Commission Subcommittee on Employee Relations. This bill would ratify two labor contracts, one compensation plan, and one salary change for an agency head that were ratified and given interim approval by the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, which is a 10-member, 5-House, 5-Senate member subcommittee that meets during the interim to provide interim approval to these contracts. Those contracts have to be given or have to be ratified by the full legislature for them to continue in effect. Most of the contracts were ratified during the 2006 session, but there were two contracts that weren't completed because of extended negotiations. Session 1 would ratify the contract between the state and the Law Enforcement Association, which represents 700 employees who are state troopers and conservation officers and BCA agents. Section 2 would ratify the contract with the Minnesota Nurses Association, which represents about 700 nurses in the state. Section 3 would ratify a compensation plan where we approve some technical changes to the compensation plan for the Office of Higher Education.
Representative Lee, I've got an A1 amendment that would create a subdivision for the Gambling Control Board. Do you want that amendment offered at this time?
Yes, sir.
All right, I'm going to move the A1 amendment to put the bill in order. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Representative Lee, the bill should be. Then, Mr. Chairman, why don't you explain the new subdivision?
Mr. Chair, the new subdivision would ratify a salary increase to the director of the Gambling Control Board. That person had been in that position for about 6 years, and the board and the governor recommended a 10% increase.
Any discussion? Representative Member?
Yes, absolutely. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, what you're proposing to do then is, in the event of a government shutdown, right? Oh, we're on the ratification, no question. I'm already loaded for the next one.
Mr. Chair and Representative Member, I'm going to be fighting against ratified contracts.
Representative Lilly, you may want to bring more golf balls for the next one. One I don't think is going to do it. Any questions on House File 1598? Anyone wish to testify on the bill? Seeing no further discussion and no more testimony, I will renew my motion that House File 1598, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. I'm not sure who to call on first, Representative Lilly or Representative Emmer, but I think I'm going to go up Representative Lilly.
I'd like to change my name to Representative Goodwin.
You'd need a placard for that. But Representative Lilly, I'm going to move that House File 333 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. Representative Lilly, would you explain your bill?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members again. House File 333 is a bill that would require full compensation for state employees. About 8,300 state employees in the year 2005 were forced to use vacation or comp time during the government shutdown that we had. The governor's team that you'll hear from later will be speaking in opposition to my bill and saying that we had a signed contract and it was a deal between the employees. But really what the deal was is that they were offered half of the money for the compensation for during the shutdown. So essentially they were offered half the cow or nothing. And so that kind of bothered me. And really the whole thing really wasn't their fault. It was through the efforts of us up here that basically caused the shutdown or, the governor. I mean, you can argue, I don't want to make it political really, but I mean, it was us here in this body and the leaders of the state that really caused the situation. And you know, we have good people that work for the state of Minnesota, and they were kind of held hostage in the process. And I think, so this for me is kind of about doing what I would call doing the right thing. So last session, what I did is I offered an amendment on the floor for the state government finance bill. And after a little help from Representative Seifert, he offered an amendment that the money would come from the Senate, essentially. But the amendment passed and had a lot of support. I have the printout here and many of the members that are sitting here, except for Mr. Emmer. He was on the other side. But many of the Republicans that sit here actually voted for it. And it passed 114-19. And I think the reality is people understood that it wasn't really the employees' fault, that what we're doing in this building and beyond in the governor's office, that sort of thing, really wasn't, you know, to hold the employees responsible was part of the problem. So the reason I'm bringing this forward again is, I mean, there's not a, obviously the department really doesn't support it, but there's many employees that clearly think it's the right thing. And have mentioned it to me, some constituents and some others. Part of the deal is, the reason I'm sitting by myself is in the contract, when it was settled, and I have a copy of the contract, the deal is they couldn't lobby for it. The AFSCME, MAPE members, nurses, on and on and on, the ones that were off during the time, is they couldn't, they can't, part of the contract is they couldn't say anything. So it's kind of, I'm by myself, I'm going forward with this, and we're going to hear from the other side. Just just 2 days ago, you know, I turned this bill in January, and 2 days ago the folks that are from the department came and visited me, and you know, I asked them, I said, well, is there anything we can do to, you know, maybe make it more palatable? And they didn't, as they say, they didn't really think that we could put any lipstick on this cow, but to make it any better. But I think it's a, you know, one thing you have to keep in mind is that the bill, all the money was given to the department. They were fully funded. So keep that in mind when we're here from the other side. And yes, it's going to be a little accounting nightmare, but they've already figured out half. So all they have to do, basically, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a perfect thing, but I mean, they need to just pay the other half. So that's what this is about, and thank you for your time, Mr. Chair members.
Is there someone from the governor's office here? You'd said that they were going to... Is there anyone from the governor?
Here somewhere. I'm...
All right. Why don't we have, since you
pretty
mentioned them, why don't you come down and... Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Larson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner from the Department of Employee Relations. I also serve in that capacity as the state labor negotiator, and I've been with the Department of Employee Relations for over 20 years. I'll try to keep my comments brief, but we do oppose this bill for a variety of reasons, and I'm here to explain that to you today. This is a very complicated process when you're dealing with approximately 50,000 employees in our payroll system. The issue of the government shutdown came to our attention in the spring of 2005 when the legislature was grappling with the issue of the budget. We had this experience before under the previous budget session. As you know, that the legislature didn't resolve the budget until June 30th at 12:45 p.m. on June 30th of the previous biennial budget. And so we had some experience with what we were going to anticipate. And as you know, the state constitution prohibits the executive branch from spending any money unless the legislature appropriates the money. And so with the previous experience that we had, we sat down with the unions. We called a meeting in probably late May saying, if this shutdown happens, what are we going to do? I mean, it posed a series of issues for us. How are we going to send out 50,000 layoff notices to our employees? Just the implication of that for our employees in the classified service with regard to bumping rights and so on, our system isn't designed for that. It wouldn't work. On the other hand, we have the needs of the employees, and I appreciate the emotional concern from Representative Lilly, and that's why we did sit down with the unions to talk to them. How are we going to navigate through this if it does happen? We did reach an agreement with the unions prior to the government shutdown, which provided for employees to be able to use vacation once the money was appropriated, because they weren't going to be working. We also assured them that no matter what, under any circumstances, we would pay for their insurance. So insurance was off the table. They didn't have to worry about insurance at all. And then in addition to that, we also provided that we would pay for the 4th of July holiday without any eligibility requirements. In turn for that, what the employer received is that we did not have to send the layoff notices out until 10 days after the shutdown. Reason being is the chaos that would have occurred in our workplace. And in addition to that, we did not have to implement our bumping rights. And so we had a deal. Well, unfortunately, the shutdown occurred. And it was ugly. But it was resolved, and when the legislature resolved the budget on 2 weeks after, on I think it was July 15th, the money was appropriated. There was no mention in the resolution of the budget that the state employees would be paid. Reason being is the complications of it. We then entered into bargaining. This became an issue at the bargaining table, in spite of the fact that we had this agreement with the union. Which did kind of catch me by surprise, because in my business, a deal is a deal. But nevertheless, we sat down with the unions and we said, okay, we'll talk to you about it outside of bargaining. We hired as a consultant the former commissioner from the Bureau of Mediation Services to help mediate this issue for us. We had over five meetings with all of the unions to resolve this matter. And we did reach an agreement, but like I said, this was very complicated. We had employees that were sick during that period of time. We had employees that had, you know, if you look at the first 2 weeks of July, that's prime vacation time. They were going to be off anyway. We had employees that did not submit any vacation, and so it posted all these issues. And so what we did was the unions made the offer and said, well, how about half? And so we met with the governor, and we talked about it, and the governor said this was a fair compromise, and it was our understanding that we put this to bed, and that this would not become an issue in front of the legislature, that this would not be a cause, and that this would be put to bed. And we resolved that matter, and I would like to say that it was voluntarily signed by all of the unions that represent state employees. And it says that this agreement constitutes a complete and total understanding, and that the parties agree they will not make any effort to diminish or enhance the terms of this agreement before any judicial, quasi-judicial, legislative, or quasi-legislative body. And that's why we oppose the bill. Two quick comments on this, and that is just some, first of all, the money that was appropriated was well spent beyond what was appropriated. Those settlements that have been approved for this biennium, our labor agreements far exceed the money that the legislature appropriated. So there is no extra money, okay? And then the complications, this is over 2 years old. We've had employees that have resigned from state service. We've had employees that have retired from state service. We've had pay increases for state employees during this period of time. And if you restore that other half, it's just the administrative nightmare that we're going to have regarding the pay increases. Is what is it going to be? Money that went to a health care savings account and so on. And just a whole latitude of system. I wish this wouldn't have happened, the entire shutdown, but from an employer point of view and from a business point of view, we handled it fairly, we handled it professionally, and I felt that this was behind us. And so that's why we're opposed to this bill. Thank you.
Representative Lilly, you want to briefly respond because we're chewing up time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, he went through much of that in our office and my office discussing it. And I just want a couple points. They were fully funded, and the way we're set up with the biennium, we're in the biennium. The money should be there. I'm not sure where it was spent, but I work for Northwest Airlines. And right now we're selling, I work on the ramp, and we had a deal where they sold off some of our stock, or the stock, but the debt service. Well, what they did is they sold off 20%, and then they figured the formula, and then they paid us. Well, just now they allowed Northwest is letting our work group sell off another 20%. Well, I would imagine it's much easier to do it the second time. So they went through this formula, I guess, so I'm rolling this over to the state. And yes, there's going to, and I understand that, we've talked about that, there's going to be some people that, if they retired, I don't expect that they'll be paid. I mean, there's going to be some casualties. It's not going to be a perfect world. It's where the people are still working for the state of Minnesota. And to me, it's about doing the right thing and treating people fair. So that's what it's essentially about. You know, nobody really wants to talk about it, Mr. Chair members, because it's a little embarrassing for us, you know, as members and for the governor. So, but I think it's the way we would want to be treated.
All right. Rep. Sencon.
Mr. Chairman, we've heard that this was computed once because they did it. And we've heard that Representative Lilly doesn't expect to compensate people who have retired or been newly hired and didn't go through this. So how about a simplification of doing this and just doubling, just giving the same amount that was computed before to the people who are still in state government? Seems to me that that's one flick of the computer switch would do that. Again, it may not be perfect, but it at least it gets rid of any of the argument that you have to do another computation and you have to do other things and so forth. So you have an amount that went to each employee, find out if that employee is still in state government, and just give them that amount again. And you can write that in one sentence.
You want to respond to that?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, my position is still the same. Yes. We have an agreement that we worked out with the union. We had a handshake. We had a deal. That's a big thing for me, and I cannot agree to that.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Kahn,
I don't see how the union has violated this at all. Representative Lilly has come here. He's the sole author on the bill. He's not a union member. No union member has spoken to me about this. All I answered was the issue that you raised about how difficult this was going to be. And I just kind of simplified it. There's got to be a record of that amount, and you've got to know how many employees were there. Seems to me that's just putting two numbers together. So I'm not talking about whether that you don't want to do it because you think it's a violation of what you're doing. I'm just saying that that's an easy way to do it. Again, you don't have, and you don't need all the verbiage about what you have to compute. You just need the one number that you came to, the one number and the one set that you came to before.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I guess I'd have to speak to the people that handle this administratively. I know that in some of the conversations that I had with them prior to this office, they wish they would have just come up with a lump sum, like $500 or $1,000. Just give everybody a lump sum as opposed to calculating these hours because it became a... But you...
But you've done it.
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand, Madam Representative Kahn, that it does help. Yes.
Okay. Representative Emmer.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if we could get a copy of the agreement.
I have it.
Mr. Larson says he has a copy of the agreement.
But
I think he could provide it. Really has a copy of it, too. Right.
Well, we don't.
Okay.
No, I'm all members. Yeah, all members at some point. That's all I'm asking
for. All right.
For.
And we will get a copy to all members.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Representative Brody.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lilly, I know you come about this and bring this forward in very good faith. But the concern that I have is that we often get told as legislators not to meddle in the negotiations process. And the concern I also have is that if we pass this through, we make the assumption, and I think a legislative statement, that the unions did not represent their people. Because they went to the table, represent the people that are part of their union, and in good faith negotiated with the administration, with the Department of Employee Relations. They came up with a deal that they both signed off on and agreed was fair. So I guess I'm concerned the statement that is sending, and also in terms of the legislative meddling that we often get told not to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Broad. You know, I very much agree with you, and part of the problem is, you know, I think the unions, and then Mr. Larson, I think it's a separate deal for me. It's us as a legislative body doing the right thing, treating our employees the way that we'd want to be treated. So it's, you know, they haven't come to me, he's come to me against it, but you know, he takes it very personal because he takes great pride in his work, and I respect that. But I think we need to do, as a legislative body, treat our employees, because we're doing the work up here. We had a shutdown. It's beyond their control, and I think we just need to treat them right. And I think that kind of showed itself when we had such a great, you know, we didn't agree much last session, but it had a 119-14 vote or whatever it was. I can't read and talk at the same time. 114-19. You know, so, I mean, there was a lot of bipartisan support. So I don't know if that fully answers your question, but I'm trying.
All right. Representative Emmer.
I know you want to move on, Mr. Chair, but Representative Lilly, maybe you've already said it the way I'm going today. I'm sure that you did. How many employees are we talking about? How many hours are we talking about? What's the average cost for each one?
Representative Lilly, or maybe Mr. Larson, I'm not sure who could answer that one.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Emmer, I fully don't know. I'm a little bit with Phyllis Kahn and or Representative Kahn with the ease of the matter, but the actual number, I do know that we fully funded all of these departments at 100%. We did that as a legislative body, and I don't know what they've done with the money since then, but it seems to me that the biggest problem is what he spoke of as the just kind of figuring it out and making sure that, you know, there are going to be some people that aren't happy. You know, some of the retirees that would go, well, you know, what about me? Or, you know, so it's not going to be a perfect system. But overall, I think we can face these people and say we've done the right thing. So I'll pass the question to really get to it. Mr. Larson.
Representative Larson, do you have an idea?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, the average state employee wage right now is a little over $23 an hour. This was 1 week, 40 hours of pay. We calculated the half of the cost in the previous settlement at about $4 million, a little under that. The actual cost, now again, this is restoring vacation, so I will give Representative Lilly the credit of that, and that is that if you fund a full-time position and you're funding it, and you give the vacation hours, and it's not an actual cash flow, but when we, let's say, for example, in labor relations, if we agreed to an extra floating holiday, for example, we would report that to the Legislative Subcommittee on Employee Relations, because the employee's getting paid and they're not working, and so that translates into a cost associated with us. So from a cost perspective, we're looking at, if we treated it the same as the previous settlement, it would be a little less of the $4 million. I don't have the number. We're trying to come up with a number that would factor in the actual, you know, because we had employees that did not have vacation. We restored 40 hours of pay for them. We had employees that had vacation that didn't use vacation, and some of the other things that makes it difficult. And then finally, I want to emphasize while the legislature appropriates funding for those agencies, there's no provision in those appropriations that limits the unions to have to live within that funding ratio. Now, I emphasize that those settlements that we settled with last time spent more than what was appropriated for those state agencies.
All right. Any more discussion, members? Seeing none, then I'll renew my motion that House File 333, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Mahoney. He's here? Yes, he is. This goes to the floor. Representative Mahoney, I'm going to move that House File 1336 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry.
That would be correct.
And I believe there are two sections of the bill that were the purview of this committee concerns, and it's the council and some rulemaking. So could you explain the bill?
Mr. Chair, I also have an amendment to get it in the shape that I need.
Is it the A2 amendment?
That is correct, sir.
I will move the A2 amendment, and that will put the bill in the shape that you need it.
There's one verbal.
I'm going to move the A2 amendment, and members. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. The bill should be in the shape you wish it, Representative.
There's one verbal amendment that I would need to make on this amendment, or on the bill now, sir.
All right.
That is on line, page 1, line 22.
right after the word the, strike Department of Labor and Industry, and insert the word board.
Representative Mahoney, I'm going to have Mr. Shepard make sure that what you're saying actually works before we adopt it. So, Mr. Shepard, can you explain what that did?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, this was a reference that I missed when I prepared this amendment for Representative Mahoney. It was on page 1, line 22, to strike the phrase Department of Labor and Industry, and then after that insert the word board.
Members, everyone have the amendment. I'll move the amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Mahoney, it should be in the form you wish.
It is. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this bill does, what this committee hopefully will look at, is the the board, the creation of the board, who is on the board, and the rulemaking authority that goes along with it. 1336 on page 1, the high pressure board, the high pressure piping system composition puts the board members in, and that really starts on page 2, line 1. It has a high pressure piping inspector, mechanical engineer, a representative of the piping industry, piping contractors from Metro and from Greater Minnesota, journey persons, one from Metro, one from Greater Minnesota, representatives of utility companies, and states that except for the licensed mechanical engineer and the members from the utility, all persons appointed to the board must possess a current license or competency credential required for contractors or persons engaged in pipe fitting. The powers of the board, it will elect its own members, its own officers, specify the high pressure piping code that must be followed, maintain an appeal process, adopt the rules for regulations, licensing of contractors and persons in training, adopt the rules necessary for continuing education for individuals regulated underneath this section. And then it talks about paying for the, so that's part of the amendment, is how they get compensated. This board, this changes the law, the system from an advisory council to a board with power to actually decide how, what kind of piping code is adopted and how we regulate that particular board. It does not, this bill doesn't have anything to do with changing the code at this particular time. That would have to go in front of the board. Anyone can go in front of the board.
Do you have anyone to testify on the bill?
There's people here to testify if they'd like.
Is there anyone who wishes to testify either for or against the bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Kahn. Can I just ask a question while they're coming?
Sure. Representative Kahn.
I don't know if this is of Mr. Mahoney or Mr. Shepard, but the necessity of confirmation by the Senate. Do we usually have that for this kind of pretty technical group? I know the senators are really competent, but the thought of them discussing...
Why don't we refer that to Mr. Shepard? And let's go to Mr. Shepard
now. Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, I don't think this is unusual. I'll double-check, but for other some of the occupational licensing boards and things, I believe, are confirmed by the Senate groups that have rulemaking authority.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Hahn, I figured we should have the body that really knows what they're doing confirm them, but they said they had to keep it in the Senate.
My preference is, Chairman, my preference is nobody.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Johnson, and I'm an attorney representing the Minnesota Pipe Trades, and I'd like to talk just briefly about the plumbing and high-pressure piping boards, and a lot of this testimony will be similar to the testimony for Representative Nelson's bill that's also on the agenda. Part of the reason that we're supporting Representative Mahoney's bill with respect to these two boards and believe change is needed is that the current system doesn't work. For starters, there's a handout, and we did a 50-state survey, and what you'll see is Minnesota is in the minority of states with respect to how they promulgate codes. Our system is where the commissioner makes a decision after consultation with an advisory council. Most other states, and there's 31 of them right now, have a board with licensing authority make the decisions with respect to the code. So what we're really, part of what's being asked for here is what's in most other states by a large majority. We don't think that the current system is working particularly well with respect to the advisory council. There are a couple of examples I'll mention just to give you an idea. One is with respect to an air admittance valve. And what that is a substitute for venting your home. And what it does is it's supposed to keep sewer gas out of your house. The problem is it vents sewer gas into your house occasionally, which is why it is not even now used in hospitals and other areas. But the manufacturer wanted it to be licensed in Minnesota, or to be used under the code in Minnesota. On six or seven different occasions, the advisory council raised the concerns with respect to this particular device. And at the end of the day, it was overruled by the commissioner because the manufacturer threatened to sue. We don't think that's a particularly good way to go about manufacturing devices in Minnesota, especially ones that right now, because of Hurricane Katrina, they're pulling out of houses in New Orleans. So that's the first example. The second example has to do with the promulgation of a code that had been in Minnesota for almost 25 years. On three separate occasions, the advisory councils wanted to stay with the current code. The commissioner overruled it and wouldn't give any rationale for it. And that was something that folks were pretty upset about because about 5 or 6 years had been done with respect to trying to figure this out. So it's a situation where our groups do not think the current system works. We think it's failed. And why I think this is important for you is I think you've got to think about whether one of two things is going to happen unless the system is changed. Either there's going to be a fair system where these decisions are made, or you're going to become the plumbing board. And every year, me and people are going to come into your office and go, oh, waterless urinal, shouldn't do them. AAD shouldn't do them. A whole bunch of other people like manufacturers are going to come in and tell you why they should do them. And we don't happen to think that's a particularly good use of the time and the way to do it. So we went back, and again, we looked at all the other states, and we just want a model that is consistent with the other most of the states. And then I'd briefly just address a couple issues that we've heard in other committees. This has been through a number of committees. The first one is that somehow this is more government. Right now, the advisory council is already there. We're just saying basically give them the authority. So we're not asking to expand government. This isn't something where it's going to be this huge expansion. The second issue is somehow that it adds costs. And I guess my response to that is to go back and look at these states. Many of them, Florida, Colorado, Alabama, have these boards. And nobody's in here arguing these are high-cost construction states. The council also has as Representative Mahoney said, has a number, you know, has some balance between people who have licenses and work in the field and the contractors who have to be concerned about cost and others. And it has the support of some of the contracting organizations, and they may want to come here and testify as well. And then the final question I would say, and we've heard it in a couple committees and not all, is somehow some of these things happened in a different department, and now that they're in a new department, we should give them a chance. And I'm always reminded, I don't know if there's any WHO fans here, but I'm reminded of the line, meet the old boss, or meet the new boss, same as the old boss. The point is all the people who are in charge of it in the other departments are now doing it in the same department, and the same thing is happening. And so those are the reasons that we support Representative Mahoney's bill and have worked with Representative Nelson to try and get some change and to have a fair process. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney, you have anyone else wish to testify on the bill?
No, I think there's some other people that wanted to testify about it, but I don't think they're on my side.
All right. Then are they here today? All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Tom Joy, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you for allowing the department to testify today. The department's in opposition to this bill and the next bill coming up on the plumbing board. You, the legislature, have charged our agency with the task of promulgating codes and licensing regulations to protect the public, ensuring that cost-effective rules and regulations are established. Part of our current process is to ask for assistance and comments from what we call our advisory committees. These committees provide an avenue for all aspects of the construction industry to be heard and provide input on any rules and regulations. We try to establish these balanced advisory committees made up of labor, owners, inspectors, and other industry representatives who are charged to look at all issues and make recommendations to the commissioner. In our code adoption process, we have approximately 20 sets of rules. We currently have 14 sets of rules going through the process of adoption. The first five of the six, which are major code adoptions for the building code and the fire code and other major codes, went through without any public hearing requests because we met with industry and resolved all those issues up front. The one code that didn't go through without a hearing was the residential code, and we resolved all but two issues before the hearing and had tentative language before the hearing to resolve that issue at the time of hearing. So we believe our system works with advisory councils. We're currently in our second year of construction codes consolidation, which has taken the five silos of code development and licensing regulations and established a one-stop shop for these regulations. We believe this bill will take a step in the wrong direction, creating an authoritative board that could choose their own path on code development and licensing and not coordinate with other state regulations and licensing. We met last week with the various industry groups to specifically discuss a compromise addressing a modified recommending board versus the authoritative board. We heard only one major concern back from the industry, and that was to correct the voting on licensing issues, that voting should only be done by licensed individuals. We have made those corrections and submitted the language to the advisor proposals as a compromise. In closing, the department feels that balanced industry membership, due process, and having no vested interest in the final rules and regulations provides the best protection for the public. A number of other industry groups are here today to testify regarding this matter. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
I apologize. I did not get your last name.
Joachim, J-O-A-C-H-I-M. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And who else do you have?
I believe there's some other people that would like to testify against the bill, Mr. Chair.
Right.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Brian Hoffman. I'm representing the Association of Minnesota Building Officials today. This is an organization made up of inspectors throughout the state of Minnesota. And our position is in opposition to these authoritative boards. Although we totally understand the importance of having industry involvement, in fact, if in the past it always hasn't happened, I think we all need to take a little part of that blame and look back and say we can do it better. However, we need to maintain a current checks and balance system. All right, a handful of people, whether it be 8 or 10 or 12, and we certainly appreciate in this bill and Mr. Mahoney's efforts to try to include all of those interested parties, including inspectors and trade folks and engineers. However, it takes to the point where these boards can operate independently. Right now, there is a statutory charge for code development that the Department of Labor and Industry operates under. These boards would have none. A simple majority could change the direction of how we adopt codes, what codes we adopt, and how they're applied in the state. Furthermore, one of the biggest concerns, and I'd like to specifically testify on this in more detail on the next bill, 1190, is regarding the need for inspectors to remain neutral and not be reporting to a board that's essentially made up of a lot of people in business. With that, we'd like you to consider the issue very carefully that there might be alternatives to authoritative boards, and we would not recommend this bill. Thank you.
Representative Mahoney, this bill was heard in two other committees.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Was there any opposition to the bill in those committees?
No, sir.
Mr. Chair.
Well, I don't know that there was any that any witnesses that showed up to testify against it.
All right. And no, I'm just finding it curious that we seem to have a long line here and then two other committees there was no one. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I had
I actually serve on those two committees, and I wouldn't say that it was no opposition.
And that's right. The way I rephrased it the second time.
Thank you.
All right, there was no one that came to testify, then, is that correct?
The department was at one of the committee hearings and did express opposition to the bill.
Okay. I'm just looking at a memo of the tracking, and it indicates that there was not. Yes, sir. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Roger Axel, A-X-E-L. I'm the building official for the City of New Hope. I'm also the executive officer for the Association of Administrative Building Officials. And not to repeat the comments Mr. Hoffman just presented to you, but our largest concern is the creation of an authoritative board that answers to themselves. As Brian indicated, Mr. Hoffman indicated, the inspector is a neutral party, and the language we had, the concerns we had at the high-pressure piping board, our inspector concerns, the language has been addressed. So I would like to reserve my further comments for House File 1190, which is coming up after this one.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Good morning.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
I'm Phil Raines. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Associated Builders and Contractors. And we just want to echo many of the other concerns here today. We feel it's very important that the department pulls all of these codes together. We do have one building code that our contractors have to go in and implement each regulation, not in a silo, but put a building all together. Feel the department is best suited to look at what their inspectors are going to be able to enforce, be able to pull their code together so that we can have a unified code. That's the entire thrust of the construction codes consolidation in DALI. And this moves away from that. I think we have to give DALI a little bit of time in order to make this work.
Mr. Chair. If I may, in response to the testifiers, all of them, I want to remind the committee that this was a long process moving away from the codes that this state had for 75 years, where they all worked together. Certainly there was some problems, but they all seemed to be able to be worked out. We have some of the best buildings built in the country, in the state, because we had for many, many years one of the strongest building codes, whether it was high pressure piping or cement lane, all the way from and everything in between. These boards sat for years and made recommendations to the commissioner, and the commissioner accepted them and moved on them and worked with the boards. We have seen over the last 5 to 6 years a movement away from that. We have seen the board vote in a majority against adopting some of these codes, some of these recommendations, and then see the commissioner overturn that vote and go the other way with no explanation, forcing the industry, not just union, not just non-union, but the whole industry as a whole, to go to court to get an explanation. And then it didn't really come out as a very good explanation, even after spending significant amounts of money. These boards will open up the process and put some teeth behind the recommendations that this state had in the same fashion that this state had for 75 years.
I believe Representative Peterson has a question then. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask a question of Mr. Joycom from the Commerce Department, if I could. Mr. Is he still here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And the question for Mr. Joycom and for the author of the bill, help me understand as a street guy the difference between authoritative and advisory boards. And if you're testifying against an authoritative board, the author is testifying that the advisory boards have not worked. So help me understand the differentiation, number one. And number two,
is this the first move towards an authoritative board, or do we have other authoritative boards?
Mr. Jack.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I will answer the second question first.
Okay.
In the building code arena, we do not have any current authoritative boards. In other arenas, cosmetology and others, there may be authoritative boards. I'm not sure what's out there. I don't know those, so I'm guessing there is. I'm guessing there's some on both sides. The difference between at least our version from the department of what an advisory council board is versus an authoritative board is we go through the process of inviting all of industry in, talk about the issues. There are people on both sides. There are plumbers and pipefitters on both sides of the table here addressing issues. We have to try and weigh those issues, hopefully come out of there with a recommendation that we can move forward through the rule process. The legislature, have established that Administrative Procedure Act for us, all agencies, to follow when we adopt rules. So we have to go through certain notices. We have to give them time frames to comment. We go through that whole process. Generally, a rule process takes us at least 18 months. Most of the time, it's 2 years for us to adopt rules. So we develop these advisory committees, take recommendations, move forward with that, and generally, through the process, again, probably have 1 out of 12 rule adoptions where we have a public hearing request by the industry or, in this case, makers of the air admittance law requested a public hearing on some issues. So that occasionally that happens. But generally, we are able to resolve with the various groups, industries, the issues and take the rules forward. Authoritative boards would give that authority to whichever board is given that authority to develop, or I should say, establish what they would want in rules, establish what the licensing requirements would be for a lot of cases for the industry itself, and not generally looking at involving all of the public interest in all cases. That's our concern.
Mr. Representative,
I might answer. We have authoritative boards in many places in the state, whether it's the medical board, lawyers board. So this is not new ground we're plowing. It's certainly past actions have required us to come to this particular point to go to an authoritative board. And I say the difference between an authoritative board and an advisory board is I leave my car parked in my driveway with the keys in it, and my 16-year-old who just got the driver's license, I recommend that they don't take the car out for a spin. Would be an advisory board. A rulemaking board would be you're grounded and you're in big trouble if you take it out, so don't do it.
Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I am sorry, Representative Mahoney. I guess I don't agree with you because when we're dealing with building codes, it just seems to me that we, especially coming out of the municipalities, are expecting the code to be our rulemaking body that gets things done. It protects me as a citizen. It would protect me as a city council member in knowing that those building officials are working with under a code as opposed to an authoritative board that was made up of your industry specialty. Okay. Number one. But I guess the
Mr.
other...
Chair, if I could answer that particular
question. Let's go through the chair. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, the codes that were adopted through that process over the last 6 years are much weaker codes. And much of the industry's opinion, poorer buildings are being built because of this particular code. Now, we've had a long argument. They've hired their experts. We've hired ours. I build these things. I see what's going on. And in my opinion, as a person who actually goes out on the job site, we have weaker codes today than we had 5-10 years ago.
Rep. Simpkins.
Mr. Joachim, do you want to react to that suggestion?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I don't believe we have weaker codes. And I think most of the industry would say we not. Again, the legislature has charged us to look at minimum standards. We do not require 55 items when the minimum requirement of exiting, for example, requires 2 exits out of this room. Many would say we should have four or five. But we look at minimum standards. What is the minimum to protect the public and address these issues? Now, if new products and materials have come in that some industry members feel are not as adequate as the other ones, they've all met the testing and criteria to be put in the standards of the code that we adopt.
Is there, you wish to testify? Or, go ahead, why don't you just identify yourself again?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Carl Crimmins. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Minnesota Pipe Trades. And in response to Representative Peterson's, Neil Peterson's comment about municipalities, just one instance in the last year, we've had two municipalities call our office. One was Bloomington, one was Maple Grove, both about the installation of an illegal fixture. And the inspectors were calling us because they called the state, and the state said, well, you're a municipality, you're on your own. You make the decision whether this is approved or not approved. And the city went ahead and approved it because they have an interest in those industries in their city. They don't want to anger anybody, so they want to go along. And we had to go to the Department of Labor and Industry and show them, bring out the code book, and go line and verse and say, this device is expressly prohibited in the plumbing code. The municipality does not have the right to do this. But what happens when building officials are making plumbing code issues or high-pressure piping code issues, they are not as up to speed as a person that's licensed in that craft. We understand building officials need to take care of energy, mold, structure, egress, and all that. When it comes to plumbing, it's a very dedicated group. It's a specialty group. You need to be a licensed person in that craft in order to make decisions how code changes impact the job, the building, the municipality. The same with high-pressure piping. You wouldn't want a building official making decisions on how Coke Refinery or Flint Hills Refinery now is going to remodify one of their refinery machines. You'd want a high-pressure piping person doing that kind of work. Mm-hmm. These codes, now they have a new title. I didn't know they were an alternative code board. These boards would make decisions on the industry, give the recommendations to the commissioner. These boards would still be under Department of Labor and Industry. The commissioner would be enforcing the code. All he's doing is, anyone in this room would do it with your car, would get an expert to make a decision on what's wrong and what needs to be fixed. Let the experts make these suggestions, and then the commissioner would take those rulings and enforce them in the state.
Representative Peterson. Mr. Chairman, and I'm not sure who's going to ask this. I'm curious, again, it's very substantive to me that you're starting to talk between advisory and authoritative. I mean, that's a big, big move. And this is the third committee you've been to? It's the last committee. So why are the objections coming now as opposed to the earlier hearings?
Mr. Chairman, I think and Representative Peterson, I think you probably want to ask the opponents why they haven't brought these concerns up.
I would have if you hadn't sat down, Mr. Johnson.
Well,
you and I have been friends a long time, and you're bigger than I am.
No, well, thanks for pointing that out, Mr. Chairman. But my point is that what I wanted to answer the question of is why an authoritative board and why now? It gets back to we looked at what the other 50 states are doing, and the vast majority of states are doing what we're proposing, and they're not having the problems that some of the opponents are suggesting. So I just wanted to speak to the issue of why an authoritative board, because we went and looked at what most everybody else was doing. They don't seem to be having those problems in other states where there are more people making the decisions.
All right. Go ahead. We've got one other person. Remember, we have one who wants to test down here. I think maybe to that point. So, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Oxley. I'm the Executive Director of the American Council of Engineering Companies in Minnesota. We represent about 155 engineering firms in the state of Minnesota. We have to deal with the codes in these designs. And you asked why we weren't here. Well, we were in previous hearings. We were kind of hoping this was going to be worked out between the department and proponents of the bill. It hasn't, so here we are. We're finally having to come to the... We're engineers. We don't like to get into the fight. Let's put it that way. Just one comment. I hear this statement that the vast majority of states, 31, use prescriptive boards. That's not a vast majority, but it is a majority. There's still, a significant number that aren't. We are opposed to this legislation. As engineers, we see this thing working. It's worked really well. codes have changed and they are going to change. They have to. I think the state has to look at the national picture, and I think that's what they've been doing, and I think that's what's riled up some of the industry. We're also really concerned about how the board is made up. It is stacked in the favor of contractors and the trades, and they're going to dictate what you're going to get in your home, and I think that is problematic, I think, for all of us. There is one other piece on the board that we're really concerned about, and it regulates the people who design these systems. We already have a board for architects, engineers, etc., that regulates us. And if this board goes through and other boards that are floating around over here, all of a sudden engineers are going to have to answer to a group of boards. So we would like to see, if nothing else, that removed, because if the way this language is stated, an engineer is going to have to answer to more bodies than they're going to know what to do with. So that
actually is your board an authoritative board? Or
yes, it is.
Advising?
But I just want to be clear. Let me make something clear. The only regulation they have beyond regulating their performance is there's a exempt table determining what type of projects engineers and architects would be involved in. So it's, I think, a much less powerful as far as how it affects the public in at least the construction of a home or a building, so to speak.
Representative House was on the list for a while. Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, the advisory council that we have now, how do these people get on the advisory council and what are their qualifications?
Representative Mahoney.
People get on the board. Mr. Chair, Representative House, they're appointed by the commissioner.
Representative House.
Representative Mahoney, I've been in the construction industry for 40 years, give or take. I understand where you're coming from. I have another question for you. Commissioner, what's his expertise in life?
Representative Mahoney.
My understanding is the most of the past commissioners have been attorneys.
Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, in my experience in the construction industry, and looking at what Representative Mahoney is trying to do, to have an attorney tell us, whether he's advised or not, what's best in a construction industry isn't always what's best in a construction industry. And someone testified earlier about how we always put forward the minimum standards. And he looked at this room and said, you have fire exits. Well, I started thinking about a fire breaking out here and Representative Kahn and I having to scramble for that door. It would be nice if we had one here. Why would we set everything just to the minimum standards? And I think what Representative Mahoney is doing would maybe raise it a little above the level of minimum, but also make it very practical for the industry to use and utilize. And I guess with that, I'm just very supportive of what Representative Mahoney is doing, just because of my experience in the construction industry. We need a board like this to make it work well.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, I'm not quite as thrilled as Representative Howes. The thing that hasn't been discussed, because I know that you're doing this in good faith, and I see where you're headed with it, but the change to me, and what isn't covered in this comparison, is the quasi-legislative, quasi-judicial authority that we're giving the board. And I have a couple of questions, because your delete all this morning, you changed in 326.5.1, you now give the board, and if it does pass, I'm going to suggest to you, you want to make the title consistent with the change you made. You have given the board the authority to revoke, suspend, do whatever with licenses. And just so you know, the title still says department. So that concerns me a great deal. And then listening to the discussion this morning, there's also this issue about inspections. I mean, are you, by creating this quasi-legislative judicial board in giving all this authority that once rested with the legislative-created DALI, the Department of Labor and Industry. Will this board also then be supervising inspectors that are employed by the state or the municipal authority?
Representative Mahoney.
To your first catching that, I think it's idea 3.24.
Yes.
And I will check and make those changes. One of the reasons that I was pretty insistent upon having some ability to revoke a license is there, what we're finding is that people get violations of their license, and not just one or two, but they get multiples, many, many multiples, and they never get their license suspended. If you're paying for the cost of someone to come out and put something into your home, into your business, it should be done right the first time. You shouldn't have a fifth and sixth or fiftieth bite at the apple. My intention with this bill, and as I understand it's being written, the way I've written it, is that the board would set the standards. And in this high pressure piping board, the standard for an inspector should be they have a high pressure license. That not that they are 6'4" and 125 pounds, or they've gone through this school or that school. They should just have a license. And then the department, this board's not supposed to hire people, not supposed to set compensation. That would be the preview of the department to hire that for this particular board. I think every municipality, if they're going to hire a high-pressure piping inspector, and there's only, I think it's three, and it may be four, cities of the first class, have the ability to enter into an agreement with the department for their own high-pressure piping inspection. And that would be Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, and Rochester. Now, there may be one or two more, but I'm not sure about that. Those cities should have a high-pressure piping inspector with a high-pressure license. Otherwise, they're state inspectors. Actually, I think as a state inspector, you have to have a master's license.
Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, in that part I understand. I think there are other ways to accomplish it, but you're the expert. This is the field that you're in. This is your industry. The question, though, is, and I think you in some ways answered it, this board will ultimately, whether it's direct or indirect, be supervising the inspectors themselves. You will be giving them the direction that they have to follow, and you'll be the ones that will determine whether or not the contractors that have been that are involved in doing this work have met those standards. One comment, if the system isn't working in terms of reviewing licenses, you know, the due process you think is flawed and people are keeping their license when they shouldn't. I give you an example. The chiropractic board, I found once an example of double billing on a patient, and I presented it to the chiropractic board, which is unto itself. And rather than deal with that license because it was a fellow chiropractor, they just gave an admonition. Now, if there would have been an overseeing authority that was a state independent authority, I suspect that license would have been pulled and there might have been some criminal proceedings. But the problem with a board like this having the power that you're giving it is initially it might work the way you envision. But over time, I think you're going to end up with a board that, if you're connected to the board, you get the benefit of the doubt. And if you're not connected to the board, you don't get the benefit of the doubt. That's the reason that we need to keep this within an administration like the Department of Labor and Industry, so that you have that, somehow try to maintain that independence and that oversight. And while I appreciate what you're doing, I think, and I know I'll probably end up in the minority on the issue. I think I'd like, well, I am in the minority. But what I'd like to do, if it were a different proposal, is work on the specifics within the department that you say are not working properly. So while I appreciate what you're doing, I wouldn't support it.
Representative Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment to Mr. Oxley. My professional training is in architecture and planning, and so when it comes to adding a little bit more headache in terms of codes and more layers, I feel your pain. I also know that, as Representative Howes mentioned, that the folks who have the saws and the torches often know more than the people who have the pencils and the CAD mouses. and I have a lot of respect for the folks in the field who know actually how parts are being put together day by day. And so just recognizing that, I think that what Representative Mahoney is proposing with this bill is a good thing and will increase the quality of work being completed in our buildings in Minnesota, and I do support it, but really hope that we can continue to see this as a relationship of complementary goals rather than opposing goals.
All right, members. Do you have any other testifiers? Or some more? One more. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Randy Ellingbow, and I'm actually a manager of the plumbing unit for the Department of Labor and Industry in the Construction Codes and Licensing Division. And we certainly will have an interest in the bill to follow this one, but just wanted to make a couple of brief comments in relation to a couple of the items that have been mentioned here. In particular, in relation to the issue of waterless urinals and local interpretations of the code that had an impact on whether they were used or not. I just wanted to mention that in Minnesota, it is true that local building officials administer the construction codes, including the plumbing code, and are often called on a day-to-day basis to do interpretations of our code in terms of what's allowed and what's not allowed. And I did want to say that certainly in Maple Grove and Bloomington, there were instances of waterless urinals that had been installed, and just wanted to advise the committee that when we were asked about that issue for a state interpretation on whether they were allowed or not, we did inform the communities that our interpretation of the plumbing code was that the types of waterless urinals that were installed were prohibited. So just wanted to make that correction. And also wanted to make a brief note in relation to how our current advisory committees are formed. For the Plumbing Advisory Committee, which again is more pertinent to the following piece of legislation, the way we had formed the committee was to ask a number of organizations which represent various parts of the industry, including the installers of plumbing systems, the designers of plumbing systems, and the municipal officials who inspect those. We asked them to send a representative to the committee, and so we put the responsibility on these various representative organizations to provide their own member. And so we were not who were selecting those members for our current advisory committee on plumbing. So, and just one final mention, we do have some other tools available in plumbing for enforcement actions besides just licensing action, and those are of a sort that are intended to be used in not only plumbing but in some of the other codes as it's proposed in our legislation that will be coming forward for the department on the consolidation of the various codes. So, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman? Representative Pearson. Thank you. I wrote down, I'm relieved to see it's still appropriate to flush in Bloomington, and I changed the word relieved to I'm glad. I'm reminding members that we're not on television live. This is taped, and it will be replayed after session, so you can watch this during floor session. Any other testifiers? No other testifiers. Then I will renew my motion that House File 1336, as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative Nelson, House File 1190.
Mr. Chair,
Tim Nelson,
I believe this takes the same path. I move that this House File 1190
be moved
to the general register? Who sent the other one?
I believe the general registry. Representative Nelson.
And I have an amendment to be in your packet, an A3 amendment.
Representative Nelson, do you want to move the A3 amendment?
I'd like to move the A3 amendment.
Representative Nelson moves the A3 amendment. You want to just briefly explain that amendment, Representative Nelson?
Basically, what this does is all the testimony you heard on the previous bill, so if this is dealing with the set of the high-pressure piping, it's dealing with the plumbing board. This amendment deals with the original bill, still had references in it to the, let's get my note here that I had, to the department, it's stuff that had been from the head, the Leaf Department Health and Industry in the original bill, and insert the board, the plumbing board, and delete the commissioner on page on the original bill 3.25, put the board, basically put it in the order similar to the Mahoney bill,
right,
and to make some corrections that were missed along the way.
All right, Representative Nelson moves the A3 amendment. Any further discussion to the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Motion prevails. The bill is amended. Representative Nelson.
And again, I have Dave Johnson here too from the to testify on the bill. And
well, Mr. Chairman, I think we had most of the testimony in the context of the Mahoney
Mr.
bill.
Mr. Chairman, so it's mainly a repeat of what.
So it's basically, I think, the most of the arguments have been flushed out. The one thing I would just add is that, sorry about that. That wasn't intentional. The one thing I wanted to say was is that this issue has been out there for a couple years, and last week, you know, there was some movement on the Department of Labor and Industries part with this whole advisory council idea in statute. That, you know, we gave our input, and I just don't want to leave you with the impression that everybody signed off on it, because most of the groups that we're working with have not signed off on it. My guess is that as this moves through the process, there'll be additional discussions. But basically, their proposal is just to put, you know, to recodify the advisory council idea.
Well, Representative Nelson and Representative Mahoney have given new meaning to the word passage of a bill, so. Do the testifiers on the previous bill, do we want to have the department come up again, or if you wish to come back up? Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a question for the department when they're ready.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Tom Joachim, Assistant Commissioner of the Department.
Go ahead.
Mr. Joachim, can you tell me, I'm looking at the inspection piece of it, and I see some benefit to having the inspectors separate from the people that they're inspecting. Wondering if you can give me an example of where they're combined in the department right now, or if you see benefit to having the inspectors licensed in a separate manner from the people that they're inspecting.
Mr. Joachim.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll give you a breakdown of what our department is, and then maybe that'll answer the question. I'm not quite certain what you're looking for here. Approximately 2 years ago, Governor Pawlenty signed a reorganization order to consolidate five different state agencies into the Department of Labor and Industry to consolidate the construction codes process in the state of Minnesota. So I was formerly in the Department of Administration with the Building Code Division, the Plumbing Unit was in Health Department, Residential Contractor Licensing was in Commerce. And so we've consolidated that, and you'll see our 200-page bill that we have coming through this session to try and address those changes that need to be made to follow the reorg order that was done. We currently, and just Representative Howells isn't here, but and I just want to address it. The commissioner does make the final decision, but we have currently in our construction codes and licensing unit 129 staff and 92 contract inspectors. Most of those inspectors come up through the field. We have licensed electrical inspectors that are licensed have electrical license. We have plumbing inspectors and that are licensed plumbing individuals. We also have plumbing engineers in the staff. We have architects. So we have a wide variety of industry representatives in our staff for manufacturing, for energy, for accessibility, for building code, for plumbing, electrical, mechanical, et cetera, throughout our staff to try and use the experts in those fields to gather information so we can pursue the appropriate standards that are going to protect the public here in the state of Minnesota. So from that aspect, Mr. Chair, Representative, do you have any other? I'm not sure what question you were asking on our staffing issues.
Representative Brad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, Mr. Jewakam, that's very helpful. But before, if I'm understanding the legislation correctly, before they would give you suggestions as to how your inspectors ought to be inspecting certain things, and then you would make the decisions as to how those inspections would occur. And the way I read this is that this new board will adopt the rules for those inspectors and provide continuing education for those licensed underneath this act. And so the only thing I can think of saying is fox guarding the hen house, and I don't mean it that way, but that's the only example I can come up with. In terms of the role of the inspector and their connection to those they're inspecting.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is a concern that the department has, that there is, again, you, the legislature, have charged agencies to kind of be the overseers of these various programs, and given us the authority through the commissioner to establish and have staffing that are experts in the field to address these issues. We believe that's the process that has been working for years in Minnesota and should continue to work in Minnesota.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a huge problem with the bill in general. I have a significant problem with the inspection piece. And so, Mr. Chairman, maybe Mr. Shepard can help me figure out how to delete that section out.
Mr.
I'm thinking
Shepard,
on lines 2.17.
2.17. I'm not. Mr. Shepard.
Sub-bill. All right.
Mr. Shepard, do you want to work us through what would...
Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Broad, and I think I might need some help from the author and from Representative, perhaps Mr. Joachim, but on page 2, line 17 of the original bill, it refers to rules for regulation and licensing of a number of people, including those involved in inspection of plumbing systems. And so I'm not sure what the intent of the author was there, or if the term and inspection could be deleted.
Representative Nelson, you want to respond to that? Or
Carl Furman is here from the Pipe Trades.
Mr. Chairman and Representatives, the intent here was not to be hiring inspectors and not to be having inspectors be beholden as it is to the board. The idea was that the board would set the criteria that if you're going to do inspections in the state of Minnesota, here's the method that you would inspect, here's how you would inspect, and here's the criteria you have to meet to become an inspector. The intent of this bill was always that the commissioner would be in charge of the inspectors, the commissioner would hire the inspectors. All the board would do, if you see further down, the board sets the criteria for the continuing education in the industry. They would also set the criteria for the inspectors at the same rate, that the inspector has to be educated at a certain, has to read a certain goal, pass a certain test. We'd never wanted to have the inspectors and hire inspectors. That part, we believe that's the commissioner and the department's job.
Representative Brown, does that address your concern?
Mr. Chairman, I think the intent is one thing, but I'm concerned about how the language is written, and I guess I'm a little concerned about the department's ability to manage these people within the framework that your board sets forth that they must follow if this legislation goes through. And so that's what I'm concerned about. I mean, I think I understand where you're trying to go, but that inspection piece is still of concern, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown, I don't think we have an amendment before us yet either. And Mr. Shepard hasn't been able to address your concerns. Representative Nelson.
As this discussion was being held under Representative Mahoney's bill, I wrote myself a little note here about just MMA, the Minnesota Medical Association, and they have the power to pull the licenses of doctors for, as he was discussing, that continually bad practices. The lawyer's board does the same thing. They have the ability to pull a person, a lawyer's license, if they're practicing in the wrong way. I think that's what the intent here is, that the board would oversee this, that they have a plumber that's constantly doing things wrong. They'd have the ability to pull his license and prevent him from continuing to do work.
Representative Brock.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, I hear what you're saying, but what I'm suggesting doesn't change that. Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is maybe work with Representative Nelson, if he will. Otherwise, I will move an amendment regarding the inspection piece.
I'm always willing to work with
Representative Nelson.
Representative Broad, if she has a suggestion, we can look at in language as this moves forward.
All right. This is going to the floor, to the general registry, so.
Yes, on the floor.
That's the most cumbersome way to amend it on the floor, Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely right. I thought it had another stop. I guess what I would suggest is that we remove on lines 2.17, on lines 2.16, after the comma, insert and.
After which comma?
The last comma. And on lines 2.17, delete and inspection of, or and inspection, excuse me.
Mr. Shepherd, does that work?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, I believe that does what Representative Broad intends it to do. And I will write that up for Ms. Anderson.
Still, the integrity of the sentence is still there, so it makes sense.
Mr. Chair, yes, the sentence, if the committee adopted the amendment, the sentence would require the board to adopt rules necessary for regulation licensing of contractors, journey persons, apprentices, and other persons engaged in the design, installation, and alteration of plumbing systems.
Right.
Without the inspection.
Representative Brad has moved that amendment, so we are now on that amendment. Representative Nelson.
Is in the previous bill. That language is in the previous bill with the inspections, and I would not, at this current time, not stand to support that.
All right. Any further discussion to the Broad amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
The amendment does not prevail. It is not adopted. To the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm here to have the same testimony, so I don't think I'll read it again.
It would be appreciated.
If so, is there any questions that you have? And again, I just wanted to represent houses in here to address what our membership is, but I think everybody else understood what we have for staffing.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Nelson, do you have anyone else that needs to testify?
Probably the same group that testified against the previous bill.
All right. If we could be to the point.
Good morning again. Yes, I will be. And Mr.
Please
Chairman.
Identify yourself for the record.
My name is Roger Axel, A-X-E-L. I am the billing official for the City of New Hope. I'm also the executive officer for the Association of Minnesota Billing Officials. And as from previous bill, I defaulted my testimony and comments to this bill specifically, and I'd like to address the issues of the inspector and our concerns with the language of inspector being included in this bill. Is that the municipal inspector, whether it's for a city or county township, working as contract with the state, they're simply an observer. My task as an inspector is to go out to see if these minimum provisions that are already established in the code, these minimum provisions that provide safe environments, provide for minimum life safety health provisions for all persons in any building, whether it's your house or this building here, a theater or a restaurant, those minimum provisions are there. If the board is, if the language in this bill moves forward, it would identify the requirements of what that inspector has to do. Therefore, creating a possibility or the opening the door for a conflict of interest where an inspector may be making a call that is correct for the code, but the board or some higher-up entity may decide that, well, that inspector needs to sit down and be quiet and not talk to the board on this issue. And I am speaking from experience on that with the previous jurisdiction that I worked for. And so our concern is that there may be a conflict of interest between the board and the inspector trying to do his job. Again, if you look at the charging statement, the scope and provision of any national code, is that we're there to provide minimum requirements for life, safety, health for the general public. I'm not there to design. If I have a question, I'll default to the architects and engineers on a particular system. If I have, if I'm unsure of interpretation, I'll contact my colleagues, I'll contact the national organizations, I'll contact our state offices for those interpretations so we can sit down and make a consensus on an issue and not be directed by some outside third party telling us how I have to inspect the building, what I'm supposed to be doing for this inspection, and the criteria that I have to inspect it under. The recent legislation provided for certification or competency criteria for inspectors, I think that was a good move. It shows that the individual may not be a 20-year veteran in the field, but he also has taken the time and the initiative to get educated in that specific trade, to take a certification exam that's been established by a national organization and shows competency in understanding the installation of those provisions. I'm not a licensed plumber, but I can look at a pipe diagram and I can do pipe sizing. I can read a plan, I can read a drawing that's been approved by the state agency as required in my city, and I can look at that drawing in the field. I'm not going to be concerned with the actual overall concept of the building, but somebody else has done that. They've had a plumbing engineer design that building, so I could do that inspection. So we'd like to see the language. I'm glad you brought that item up, Representative Broad, is that the language for inspectors, we'd like to have it removed from this bill.
Representative Pearson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got two questions. I'm going to order one for Mr. Axel, but first for Mr. Crimmins. Is it Crimmins? I'm sorry, Carl.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
You just testified a few minutes ago that it was not the intent of this legislation to impact inspectors. Yet when the motion came to take that out, I was hoping you were going to weigh in on that and agree with the intent of the amendment. Because you had just said that this is not meant to impact inspectors. You're sitting next to the author, and I was hoping you would encourage the author to take that amendment. So that's the first question of you, sir. And then the second question, Mr. Axel, you will, under this code, you will have to be a licensed plumber.
Correct. If I'm a member of the board. If I am a plumbing inspector, I have to be certified in that
discipline. Okay.
I don't have to get a state license.
Okay.
License is for the mechanic, the installation.
Okay. Mr. Crimmins, could you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative? No, what I was trying to say earlier was that our language in this bill was we would not hire inspectors. We would only specify the criteria that the commissioner would hire. We would like to see an inspector be certified in plumbing in the state of Minnesota or have a license, but we would not do the hiring. We would not do the administering of the inspectors. We want to set the criteria, the board, and the same way the board is going to set continuing education for people in the field, plumbers, they would also set continuing education requirements for the inspectors. But as far as the inspector reporting to the board, the inspector would continue to report to the commissioner. The board was only there to set guidelines.
Okay, that helps. Representative Broad, did you have a question?
I do. I do have a question for Mr. Axel. In terms of the municipality portion of this, I'm wondering if you are required to be a certified plumber, potentially the board could choose that as one of their criteria. I would imagine the cost to cities would be significant.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would be because the proposed language requires that the makeup of the board is two inspectors. One of them has to be a licensed plumber. And very few municipalities have plumbing inspectors that are licensed plumbers. The larger jurisdictions, that's a natural progression from the trades into the inspection field. So you have a lot of licensed plumbers, which is why a lot of larger cities can do their own plan review. New Hope is a small city. I'm not a licensed plumber. I have no agreement. Our city has no agreement with the state, so I cannot do a plumbing plan review on a commercial building. But I can inspect it. I am a certified plumbing inspector by the National Code Organization.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's the difference that I'm seeing is that you're certified by a national organization, but potentially, if this board chose, that wouldn't be good enough. You might have to be certified as a state plumber. I mean, that's what I'm concerned about is closing the door on a whole lot of people who are very good at what they do, like yourself.
That's the way I see it. Is that I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. The makeup of a board, one of those inspector positions, the individual have to be a licensed plumber. and we have a lot of competent, qualified inspectors out there, building inspectors, combination inspectors, that are looking at building, mechanical, plumbing, septic issues on sites. And so there are a lot of qualified inspectors out there.
Rip said no.
It was whispered in my ear here that that's current. What he's saying is that that's currently law. It's currently the way it's being done. This doesn't change that. And as far as setting minimum standards that they have to, it's not a lot different than the post board setting minimum standards for police officers. You have to, if the city of New Hope was going to hire a police officer, they'd have to have their post certificate before they could be hired as a police officer. It's quite similar to that. I mean, they have to have a certification to be the plumbing inspector. They wouldn't have to have a plumbing license.
One more? We've got one more person here that wishes to speak. Welcome again, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Hoffman, representing the Association of Minnesota Building Officials. And once again, yes, we're in opposition of this bill. You know, this has significant implications, much greater. You know, we're hearing comment and discussion about, well, this is not what the board would do. Well, this board, if approved, could decide that if you're going to look at inspect plumbing, you have to be a licensed plumber, or come up with other various criteria. Most all of the inspections in this state take place by the municipality. Cities hire inspectors under the direction of a chief building official. They work for the city, and they administer the state construction codes. But 80 to 85% of the cities use combination inspectors. An inspector will go out and look at many areas of construction. This is in the state's best interest. As an example, if you're doing a bathroom remodel, adding something in your basement as a homeowner, right now we can send an inspector out there who is trained and educated to look at both the plumbing, the venting, and the framing. This saves everybody trips. We don't want to send three inspectors out there. We want the inspectors to work and look at the state construction code as a single entity to help educate homeowners, work with contractors and the designers so that it works as a single whole and do it in the most efficient and effective manner. We don't know what this board would do. That's the problem with any of these authoritative boards. There's no control over it. There's no checks and balance. You're leaving it up to 12 people, in this case, some of them which are licensed trade plumbers, whether they own a company or working in the field. And there's always the chance, the opening, for there to be a conflict of interest. Our state codes are minimums. Some people say they should be more strict. That may be the case in some instances. Other times we hear that the codes are way too strict. As an example, a person doing work who says, my goodness, why is the city inspector making me do all this? Well, the inspector is next to the code. We're here trying to administer and help people to do it right. No matter what codes you do, what you adopt, there's always going to be the issue about it's too strict or too lenient. There is no perfect code. So I think the best thing that can be done is people working collectively together. And that is not done by creating a small group of people with the authority, basically, to have this kind of widespread control over the rule process involving inspections. A medical board is slightly different. They're not regulatory. As much as we try not to say that we're out there basically doing code enforcement, that is a component, a very small component, because most things are resolved through communication and education. But the bottom line is an inspector sometimes has to do enforcement with a contractor to get the contractor to do it right for the benefit and the good of the state. Our stakeholders here, the people that we're answering to, are the residents using the buildings, the homes and the offices in the state. And because of that, we would urge you to reconsider this and to consider opposing this bill. Thank you.
All right, members. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, I first have to tell you that I feel sorry for you, because in the other committees, you were the first one to come up, and so you carried the water for Mahoney, so at least you got a break today. But I just want to go over a couple of things. I think on the last bill, Representative Emmer pointed out some good points in that. So, you know, I understand the intent. If years down the road, how can this possibly be influenced in a way that we don't want to see? As the testifier mentioned here, you know, there could be serious issues where the current board members 5 years down the road might feel pressure from a buddy that says, well, you should, you know, revoke the license of so-and-so, or, you know, things of that nature. And I just think that we're opening ourselves up to some serious problems that we may not see in the near future, but down the road. And I would just encourage us to strongly really consider what we're doing here today. The other thing that I want to mention, too, is, you know, I served on the Planning Commission back in my community, and it was advisory, and the City Council didn't always take our advice when it came down to decisions in the end. And sure, that was frustrating and upsetting, but, you know, we didn't go and say, hey, we're going to replace the City Council and make us the guys that make these decisions when it comes to planning for the city. And I just, as I mentioned, I had a visit from Mr. Crimmins in my office, and if there's problems with the Department of Labor and Industry, then we need to discuss that and have better collaboration there. But we can't assume that every item that is brought from an advisory council is going to be automatically stamped and approved. I mean, there's a lot of other things to consider. But as I mentioned to him in my office, you know, maybe I kind of feel like we're addressing the wrong problem here today.
Mr. Chairman, I've been listening to all the testifiers, and I think the testifiers coming down and talking about the inspections. While I can't move to reconsider that piece, what I would like to do is maybe blend the two. I think I can find some common ground. On lines 2.17, I'd like to do the same amendment that I tried before, and I'll move striking and inspection. Line 2.16, I would insert and after the comma. That's the same amendment I made before, Mr. Chairman. And then in addition, on line 2.19, I would strike, adopt that the rest of the entire sentence and strike all the way up to the colon on line 2.20 and insert the board can forward education recommendations for inspectors to the commissioner.
All right. Mr. Shepherd, let's let him digest this for a second and make sure it's correct.
Mr. Chair, members, and I'll just double check this with Representative Broad to make sure I have this correctly. The first part of her amendment would be the same as before. On page 2, line 16, after the last comma, insert the word and. On page 2, line 17, delete comma and inspection. And then my understanding is on page 2, basically delete lines 19 and 20 and insert a clause 5 that would read the board may forward educational recommendations for inspectors to the commissioner.
Correct.
And then there'd be an and also at the end of that.
All right. Members, everyone understand the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, again, what I'm trying to do with this amendment is recognize the concerns of the folks who have come up and discuss the inspection piece of it, while at the same time understanding, I think, the need for some type of collaboration from the board of the plumbing board itself. And so I think this accomplishes both pieces. I'd be interested in some reactions.
Representative Nelson, I would be too.
Why don't let Mr. Crimmins give the answer.
Mr. Crimmins? Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad. Again, to address the second half, when you change 219 and 220, now you've cut out all the licensed plumbers in the state of Minnesota, and that's what the board would be prescribing is continuing education. That's something that's not currently done, and the plumbing industry would like to see that plumbers do have to have some continuing education requirements. So that amendment would cut them out of this totally. Again, this bill is not focused towards inspectors. I know there's a large contingency here against the bill, but that wasn't our intent to go after inspectors. All we want is consistency. And the reason that we can't listen to the commissioner, I've heard about
since 1995, the advisory council has ruled against certain devices seven times. The Department of Health argued in court against the device. The administrative law judge ruled in the Department of Health and the advisory council's place that said they were correct. And then the commissioner of health, once threatened with a lawsuit, decided to issue a temporary rule and overrode all of that action. And then when you say we should go to the commissioner and talk to him, but when you've talked to him for seven times in 10 years and you've always had the same answer, and the scientists have come in and said these devices pollute 10 times what Minnesota allows, and you go to court and the department even argues your point, and the department did the rebuttal to the administrative law judge, and the commissioner still overruled all of that and said, well, I'm sorry, I'm going to issue a tentative rule, interim rule. And we had to go to court again and see the commissioner this time. And the same with things have gone on three times on the mechanical board. Three times the board, the committee, was picked by the commissioner. And three times the committee voted against the commissioner after hundreds of hours of testimony. And the commissioner said, well, I'm sorry, thanks a lot, but we got to move on, and I'm going to rule against you. It wasn't enough of a majority, but every time the vote was the majority.
All right. Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, and I understand your frustration, but that really is separate from the issue of the inspectors. I understand where you're coming from, and I know that there's some strong frustration there, but if your intent is not to deal with the inspectors, then let's just take it out. And, Mr. Chairman, I would withdraw my motion, but I will renew a different motion, just recognizing my intent is not to get rid of all the continuing education.
Representative Broad withdraws her amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that, again, on lines 2.16, we add the word and after the comma. On line 2.17, we delete and inspection. And then, Mr. Chairman, maybe Mr. Shepherd could add a number six, where it says, the board may forward education recommendations for inspectors to the commissioner, and then renumber on lines 2.21 to a 7.
Mr. Shepherd, do you have that?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, I believe I do. Do you want me to repeat it, Mr. Chair?
Why don't you, so we know what it is?
Mr. Chair, the amendment, the first part of the amendment is page 2, line 16, after the last comma, insert and. Page 2, line 17, delete, comma, and inspection. Page 2 after line 20, there would be a new clause 6, and we'd put the ands in the right place. And the new clause 6 would read, the board may forward educational recommendations for inspectors to the commissioner, semicolon, and.
Representative Nelson, to the amendment. All right. Members, all those in favor of the broad amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. I'm sorry, what?
We have a division.
Division. All right. Division. All those in favor signify by raising your hands. All those opposed? Hands up again for those opposed. We got Nelson up there too. Six. All right, then. The chair's ears were not in tune. The motion did prevail. The amendment is adopted. The bill is before us as amended. Any further discussion? All right, all those in favor, I'm sorry, Representative Nelson renews this motion on House File 1190 as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is adopted. All right, Representative Bigham, we're going to try to do yours because we understand it is truly a small housekeeping bill. And I know Mr. Jarrell is going to tell us that. I'm going to move that House File 1957 be recommended to pass, and it goes to general and go to the General Registry.
Consent calendar?
On a day like today, I don't think we'd bring that up. Let's just go to the general registry. We're under a little pressure, and some calendar might be a bit much.
Mr. Chair, if you wanted to put this in an omnibus bill, that would be fine, too. It's up to you.
We don't have an omnibus bill in this committee. General registry is where we're going to put it. So,
Mr. Chair, I do have a couple oral clarifications, which the Senate took up on my bill.
All right, Representative Bingham.
The first one would be on page 2, line 216. They struck which each devote.
Wait a second, Representative Bingham, you're on page 2, line 216, and what are you doing?
We're striking which each devotes, and they inserted each of which must devote.
Mr. Shepherd, do you have that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I will write these up for Ms. Anderson.
All right, thank you. Well, and there was one other?
A couple more that the Senate did. Well, on page 3,
yeah.
You know.
Representative Cox.
Mr. Chairman, I hate to go to Mason's, but Mason's actually tells you that you never refer to anything that the other body did. If you want to do it,
oops,
that's okay. But, you know, I don't. At this time, I'm not sure that it's necessary, unless it's something substantive. I'm not sure it's necessary to get the bill in exactly the same form as the Senate has.
Representative Kahn, you're correct.
I will go with
so
your wisdom.
We're not present. Going to
if
discuss.
These are substantive.
Okay, these are just grammatical changes.
We speak halves here.
You can debate Senate grammar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then,
all right, then the bill's before us. What does the bill do?
I will turn that over to the Department of Employee Relations, Mr. Jared Jurdahl. It's just technical things.
Mr. Jurdahl, do you want to just quickly tell us what is in there?
Sure. I guess I was a little unclear. We were hoping to make those small oral changes as well. We're not supposed to be doing that now. Is that correct?
No. If the bill is almost identical to the Senate's at some point, we can Senate language could be inserted. So I think right now what we want to do is just have the bill proceed.
I see. Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Jared Jordahl with the Department of Employee Relations. This bill is our agency initiative dealing with the Combined Charities Drive. The Combined Charities Drive is a payroll deduction program which permits state employees to direct charitable giving to participating charities. Last year, 37 charities took part in the program and received a total of about $950,000. What this bill does is it streamlines the application process, it clarifies some definitions, and eliminates some duplicative references. The largest single piece is that the statutory sections dealing with the Combined Charities Program are formally moved from the Attorney General's Charitable Organization Statute to the Department of Employee Relations Statute. The Attorney General's office is completely on board with that change. They think it's a common sense move.
And the Mr. the repealer, can you explain what the repealer is at the end?
I believe that repealer is saying that the portions on page five, I assume.
Yes.
Is that repealer is saying that the portion of the Attorney General charitable organizations law which gives them the coverage of the Combined Charities Program, that part is repealed and it is then replicated in the Department of Employee Relations statute.
All right. And any further questions on this one?
The
Mr. John,
the bill was crafted in close consultation with the charities, and we have their complete agreement and sign off with this language.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Bill is adopted. Members, a couple of organizational points. Number one, you have, I hope, a number of green packets you haven't done anything with, so save them so we don't have to restuff them and reprint them. We are meeting tomorrow at 7:30, and we are meeting Friday at 8. So if we would get our work done tomorrow, we would not need to meet Friday at 8.
Mr. Chairman, is that 8 a.m. or 8 p.m.?
That's 8 a.m. We will do our work early and well.
Mr. Chairman, since we're going to be here Saturday, you know, what's the difference?
We'll deal with that one later. And with that, meeting is adjourned.